Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Tuesday, January 3rd, 2023. Opening day of the 118th Congress, Republicans now in the majority in the House, taking control from the Democrats. And the vote for House Speaker goes beyond a first ballot for the first time in 100 years. Republican Congressman Kevin McCarthy, the current party leader, falling short of the 218 votes he needed, a majority of the House, to be elected. Congressman pledging to battle on the floor for as long as it takes. Senate also opening the new Congress, Democrats staying in the majority there, actually gaining a seat. Their caucus now at a 51-49 edge over the Republicans. Leadership there also remaining the same. Democrat Chuck Schumer of New York is majority leader. Republican Mitch McConnell of Kentucky is minority leader. A few congressional records set today. Senator McConnell becoming the longest-serving Senate party leader in U.S. history. And over in the House, Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, Democrat from Ohio, becoming the longest-serving woman in congressional history. Also today, back in the Senate, Ben Sasse, Republican from Nebraska, giving his farewell speech. He is resigning his seat to become president of the University of Florida. And speaking of Florida, inauguration today for Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican just reelected to a second term, also considering a possible 2024 presidential run. Today in his speech, he criticized what he called the floundering federal establishment in Washington, D.C. Now to the opening of the 118th Congress and the multiple votes for House Speaker, Republican leader Kevin McCarthy coming up short. He has 222 House Republicans. He can afford to lose four votes, and he's lost many more than that in the multiple votes, 19, 19, and 20. Roll call reports. This is the first time in a century that a speaker election is not concluded on a single ballot, and only the 15th time out of 127 speaker elections held since 1789. Article goes on, the threshold to secure the speaker's gavel on the first ballot is 218 votes. Kevin McCarthy received 203 from the other Republicans voting, and Democratic leader Akeem Jeffries received 212, all from his party. Most of Kevin McCarthy's opponents are associated with the ultra-conservative House Freedom Caucus, which is known for pushing former Speaker John Boehner into early retirement in 2015 and opposing Kevin McCarthy's bid to succeed him. Kevin McCarthy has since worked to amend his frosty relationships with the Freedom Caucus with mixed success. That from roll call. Before the voting on the floor began, House Republicans met behind closed doors this morning, and after, Congressman Scott Perry, Republican from Pennsylvania, speaking to reporters.
Everybody agrees. Every single American agrees. Even the guy that wants to be Speaker agrees that Washington is broken. And he said as much in one of his most recent correspondences. Interestingly enough, over the 14 years that he's been in leadership, he's done almost virtually nothing to change it. And under pressure from a group of members who have said that we're not any longer going to accept the status quo, we have been able to force some rules changes to make things better. Even so, we gave out, and look, we've been working on this since last summer. I worked personally on it since last summer when I went to the leader and said, I anticipate this moment. We would like to avoid this moment, so let's start working on all these issues right now. Issues that will work for the American people, because the American people don't care who the speaker is. The American people care that they're paying $5 for a dozen eggs. They care that they can't afford their energy bills. They care about a wide open border and rampant crime in their communities. They don't care about this. So how are we going to fix this if we keep doing the same things and getting the same outcomes? So in the summertime, we were rebuffed. I went back in the fall, not really interested in talking. Once we get a very slim majority, after we were told there was going to be this huge red wave, well, then the conversation got a little interesting. But even so, what do you want? What do you want? We said, you're the guy that wants to be speaker. Tell us, if you want to earn our vote, how we're going to transform this place so that there's a different outcome for the American people. Tell us how you're going to do that. Yet nothing. So finally, he said, put something down. I want to know what you want. So we did in the beginning of December. And even at that point, there were people that said, I will not vote for Kevin McCarthy. But yet, I'm still working to try and avoid this moment that we're at right now. The whole time. And So that's one question you should ask yourself. Instead of saying to these folks that are standing with me, why have you brought us to this point? Well, we surely haven't come here alone. There's one person that could have changed all this. All right? So we send the letter. You see the letter. You see what's in it. And we start working on some things. And in trueness and fairness, some things, I think, on the germaneness and single subject, I think we got to a decent place. But it was like pulling teeth. And it took 3 weeks. And none of the other stuff was being worked on during that period of time. And some of the big issues for people, the rules that hold the speaker, the most powerful person on this side of the building accountable, that Thomas Jefferson wrote, that stood for over 200 years, that speakers from Democrat to Republican during Civil War, World War, pandemic, close majorities, large majorities, somehow whatever Thomas Jefferson wrote is not good enough now. It's not good enough now. Well, it is good enough now, but yet we still can't get to this point, so now we're at the 11th hour and we're saying, we want to avoid this. So we'll put a deal together to get 218 votes, including some of the people that have said, I'm never voting for Kevin. Look, that's a tall order at this point. We take it to him, we list the things, and by the way, he requested, he said, who do you want on these committees? Who do you want? Okay, well, we'll give you the names of who, you know, there's a peril to doing that up front. But we waited till last night. Okay, well, we'll try our last best final offer. And then he comes out and he says it's a personal wish list. He requested that from us. He requested that. Now, we said we can get you to 218 with this. He stood up and he shook our hands and he said, I can't do it, or I won't do it. And here we are.
Congressman Scott Perry, Republican from Pennsylvania, with reporters this morning and a couple of other members joining him. Those opposing Congressman McCarthy's candidacy for House Speaker. This was all before the House floor votes as the new Congress convened, and there were multiple votes where Congressman McCarthy and no other candidate got the necessary majority of those voting in order to be elected Speaker. Congressman McCarthy also speaking this morning with reporters after the closed-door meeting of House Republicans, and he promised to take as many floor votes as needed to reach a speakership.
We did have an intense conference, and it's intense for a purpose. We have worked for a long time. I've been leader for 4 years. I came into this position, we had less than 200 members. We are now sitting in the majority. We put forth to the American public a commitment to America. There's times we're going to have to argue with our own members if they're looking at for only positions for themselves, not for the country. For the last 2 months, we worked together as a whole conference to develop rules that empower all members. But we're not empowering certain members over others. Last night I was presented the only way to have 218 votes if I provided certain members with certain positions, certain gavels, to take over the church committee, to have certain budgets. And they even came to the position where one, Matt Gaetz, said, I don't care if we go to plurality and we elect Hakeem Jeffries and it hurts the new frontline members not to get reelected. Well, that's not about America. And I will always fight to put the American people first, not a few individuals that want something for themselves. So we may have a battle on the floor, but the battle is for the conference and the country, and that's fine with me.
Well, you've heard that the battle is for the conference and the country, yeah. But the problem is you have a math problem, you just can't get there. So what do you do on the 10th vote, the 30th vote, the 50th vote, if it just doesn't move?
Look, I have the record for the longest speech ever on the floor. I don't have a problem getting a record for the most votes for speaker
two. That'll move them.
Thank you all.
Though.
Well, I don't see how a few people, maybe it's 5, maybe it's 20, sit because they want a gavel that they can't earn by the conference of themselves. That would be interesting to me. That's not what the constituents voted him for.
If you win, the first impression of Republican majority.
Congressman Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, nominated for Speaker, speaking with reporters late morning. At noon Eastern, as the Constitution requires, the new Congress met, the 118th since the founding of the United States. And when the roll call of members-elect for House Speaker finished the first time, the vote was 212 votes for Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat, 203 for Kevin McCarthy, and 19 votes from Republicans from four other candidates, including 10 for Congressman Andy Biggs, a Republican from Arizona, who was formerly nominated, and 6 for Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, who was not formally nominated, but you can vote for anyone you want for Speaker. So no candidate getting the majority, failing to get the 218 needed of those voting. House went on to a second ballot. This time, Kevin McCarthy was nominated by Jim Jordan, who himself was then nominated by Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida. And in between, you're going to hear on the Democratic side, Hakeem Jeffries again nominated by Congressman Pete Aguilar, the House Democratic Caucus Chair of California. First, Jim Jordan.
The differences we may have, the differences between Joyce and Jordan or Biggs and Bacon, they pale in comparison to the differences between us and the left, which now unfortunately controls the other party. So we had better come together and fight for these key things, these three things. That's what the people want us to do. And I think Kevin McCarthy is the right guy to lead us. I really do, or I wouldn't be standing up here giving this speech. I came in with Kevin. We came in the same time 16 years ago. We haven't always agreed on everything, but I like his fight, I like his tenacity, and I liked it. I remember Kevin told me, I actually wrote about this in a book. I remember Kevin told me, he said, when the toughest times in life are when you get knocked down, the question is, can you come back? And I've always seen him be able to do that. We need to rally around him, come together, and deal with these three things, because this is what the people sent us here to do. My favorite scripture verse is 2 Timothy 4:7. Paul's the old guy giving advice to the young guy, and he says, fight the good fight, finish the course, keep the faith. I like the verse because it's a verse of action. Fight, finish, keep. Not wimpy words, words that I think fit America. That's what the American people want us to do. They want us to fight for the things they care about and they elected us to do. And we should all remember, only about 12,000 people have ever had the opportunity to do what we're doing today, sit in this body, serve in this Congress. It is a privilege. It is an opportunity. We owe it to them, the American people, the good people of this great country, to step forward, to come together, get a speaker elected so we can address these three things. I hope you'll vote for Kevin McCarthy, and that's why I'm proud to nominate him for Speaker of the House.
For what purpose does the gentleman from California rise?
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We're witnessing history here today. I wasn't quite sure who the gentleman from Ohio was nominating. He was nominating himself. And
is the gentleman rising to place a name in nomination?
I am. I am, Madam Clerk. I am. I'd just like to be afforded the same opportunity that the gentleman from Ohio took, Madam Clerk. Consider all that's happened. The last time an election for Speaker went to a second ballot, Leader Jeffries' beloved New York Yankees had not yet won a World Series. Consider all that's happened since then. The work that the body has entertained, the work that we've done for the people over that time. We are unified behind a Speaker who will continue that progress despite the chaos on the other side, Madam Clerk. We are going to stay here to get this done. We are unified, and we are all going to support Hakeem Jeffries for Speaker. The lead vote getter in the last ballot. Madam Clerk, as chair of the Democratic Caucus, I'm directed by the vote of the caucus to present for election to the office of Speaker of the House of Representatives for the 118th Congress, the name of the Honorable Hakeem Jeffries, the representative-elect for the state of New York, once again, and we will be unified once again in our support for him.
Pete Aguilar.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Florida rise?
To nominate a candidate for Speaker of the House.
Matt Gaetz.
Well, sometimes we have to do jobs that we don't really want to do. And sometimes we have to do jobs that we are called to do. And so, my colleagues, I rise to nominate the most talented, hardest working member of the Republican Conference, who just gave a speech with more vision than we have ever heard from the alternative. I'm nominating Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan is humble, perhaps today, humble to a fault. maybe the right person for the job of Speaker of the House isn't someone who wants it so bad. Maybe the right person for the job of Speaker of the House isn't someone who has sold shares of themselves for more than a decade to get it. Maybe Jim Jordan is the right person for Speaker of the House because he is not beholden to the lobbyists and special interests who have corrupted this place and corrupted this nation under the leadership of both Republicans and Democrats. Maybe Jim Jordan would be the right person for Speaker of the House because he wouldn't fight us when we try to get a term limits bill on the floor. Maybe Jim Jordan would be the right person because he wouldn't fight us when we try to put a balanced budget on the floor and vote for it. And maybe Jim Jordan is the right person because he would endorse the plan that was built by the Texas delegation to finally secure our border. Mr. Jordan said in his nomination that there are certain bills that we have to pass to fix the problem. The challenge is, the alternative has been someone voting for the very bills that have caused these problems. Mr. Jordan says that we cannot accept legislation like the omnibus, and I fully agree. And if Jim Jordan were Speaker of the House, if he were the leader of the Republican team, we wouldn't have that circumstance choking the economy of our country, increasing inflation, and diminishing the prospects of a better life for our fellow Americans. And finally, Mr. Jordan said we must engage in rigorous oversight. Every one of my Republican colleagues knows that the person who can lead that oversight effort, who works on it every day, who has the skill and the talent and the will, is Jim Jordan. I'm nominating him and I'm voting for him.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, Republican from Florida. Before that, Pete Aguilar, Democrat from California. And before that, Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio. Before the second vote for Speaker on the House floor, and the results were the same overall totals as the first vote. Kevin McCarthy getting 203 and Democrat Hakeem Jeffries getting 212. This time, all of the 19 Republicans who do not vote for Kevin McCarthy the first time, and it split their votes in the first vote. On the second vote, they voted all for Jim Jordan. Again, that's 15 more than Kevin McCarthy could afford to lose and not get those votes and still win the speakership. So again, no candidate getting a majority. There was a third vote, and this time there was actually increased to 20 no votes for Kevin McCarthy, voting for other people. And Jim Jordan as a nominee getting 20 votes instead of the 19. Byron Donalds, the Republican congressman from Florida, the extra vote in that case. As it all continued on the House floor into Tuesday night, a question at the White House to the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre.
I'm wondering if the president's been watching the action going on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue right now. Does he have a preferred candidate in that race?
That's one way to put it. Look, as you know, the president served as a U.S. senator for 34 years, and he understands how this process works. He certainly will not insert himself in that process. Look, we are looking forward to working with congressional colleagues, including Democrats, Republicans, and independents this year, and the new Congress, obviously, to continue to move the country forward for the American people, continue to build on an economy that is working, that because of the president's policy, if you think about the bipartisan infrastructure legislation that I just spoke about and how that's bringing, that brought both sides together and really going to deliver on an important item of the bridge for Kentuckians, but also in the region. So that's going to be our focus. We're certainly not going to insert ourselves in what's happening on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre with reporters in the White House briefing room referring to President Joe Biden's expected trip to Kentucky this week. At history.house.gov, there is this. At the conclusion of the longest and most contentious speaker election in House history, the House elected Representative Nathaniel Banks of Massachusetts as its presiding officer for the 34th Congress, 1855-57. Sectional conflict over slavery and a rising anti-immigrant mood in the nation contributed to a poisoned and deteriorating political climate. As a sign of the factionalism that existed in the House, more than 21 individuals initially vied for the Speaker's post when the members first gathered. After 2 months and 133 ballots, The House finally chose Representative Banks by a vote of 103 to 100 over Representative William Aiken of South Carolina. Well, Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, Democrat from Ohio, making some history today. She'll become the longest-serving woman in congressional history, first elected in 1982, starting her 21st term, passing the 40 years that former Senator Barbara Mikulski, Democrat from Maryland, served in a combined House and Senate career. Congresswoman Kaptur was interviewed about this by the Associated Press.
You'll soon become the longest-serving woman in the history of Congress. What does that mean to you?
What does that mean to me? Well, first of all, it's a great privilege for the place in America that I represent. The longest-serving man from the House was John Dingell of North, just north of the border here in Ohio, in Michigan. It's interesting to me that two members of Congress who could not realize their dreams in the Congress as quickly as they wanted, stayed and fought and fought and fought for their people.
When you reflect over all those years, what are the biggest changes that you've seen, or some of the biggest changes?
What's happened now is the floor of Congress, rather than being a legitimate institution of debate, has become a theater where people use it to game the media. And things happen on the floor that never would have happened before, when you had private debates and people would be taking issues in hand. And we now have people who play to the cameras.
When you were elected, there were 23 women, I think, in Congress at the time. Now there are 140, or will be 140. That's still less than 30%, though, overall. Do you see that as progress, or are there still a long way to go?
So I ran as a person from the working class who happened to be a woman. I didn't run because I was a woman, okay? I am proud of all the women that have run and all of them that I have served with. But the Congress as a whole doesn't necessarily hold my perspective, because I come from a different place in America. They're not used to people like us.
Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, Democrat from Ohio, interviewed by the Associated Press on her setting the record as now the longest-serving female member of Congress for 40 years. And that 118th Congress that opened today includes a record 149 female lawmakers. Washington Today continues in a moment. We'll look at the Senate and the opening of the 118th Congress. Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app and wherever you get your podcasts. Vice President Kamala Harris, who also holds the constitutional role of President of the Senate, presiding today over the opening of the new Congress at noon Eastern.
The chair lays before the Senate the certificates of election of 34 senators elected for six-year terms beginning on January 3rd, 2023. And one certificate of election to fill an unexpired term. All certificates, the chair is advised, are in the form suggested by the Senate or contain all the essential requirements of the form suggested by the Senate. If there be no objection, the reading of the certificates will be waived and they will be printed full in the record. If the senators to be sworn will now present themselves at the desk in groups of four, as their names are called in alphabetical order, the chair will administer their oaths of office. The clerk will read the names of the first group.
Mr. Bennett, Mr. Blumenthal, Mr. Bozeman, Mrs. Britt.
Everyone ready? Good morning. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that you take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which you are about to enter So help you God. Congratulations, senators. Congratulations.
Vice President Kamala Harris, President of the Senate, administering the oath of office to those senators. She went on to swear in all of the 34 that she mentioned, about one-third of the Senate, elected every 2 years. There are seven brand new senators, two Democrats and five Republicans. The Democrats are Peter Welch of Vermont, John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, and the five Republicans, Katie Britt of Alabama, Ted Budd of North Carolina, Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma, Eric Schmidt of Missouri, and J.D. Vance from Ohio. The Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, continues for another term. He spoke today on the Senate floor about now-divided government, Senate and White House and Democratic control, the House controlled by the Republicans.
Now, Madam President, now is the time to set our sights on the future. As we begin the 118th Congress, this Senate Democratic majority enters the new year in a stronger position than anyone ever expected. We have a lot of challenges ahead, but this majority is ready to meet them. We will be relentless, flexible, and work with the other side to get things done. It won't be easy moving forward under a divided government, but after everything we've accomplished with an evenly split Senate and a narrowly divided House, there's no reason we can't keep the streak going moving forward. Let's not forget, as I mentioned, five of our six major bills last year were done on a bipartisan basis. So let me say it again. After everything we've accomplished in an evenly divided Senate and a narrowly divided House, there's no reason both sides can't keep working together for the good of our country, our beloved country. That doesn't mean we'll agree all the time or even much of the time. It doesn't mean we'll ignore our differences or compromise on our values. We won't do that. But party differences do not absolve either side of the need to work together when the good of the country is on the line. If both sides are willing to give it a good faith effort, I'm optimistic we can be successful, far more successful than many might think.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, today on the Senate floor. The Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, also speaking and talking about a new record that he is setting today, surpassing the late Senator Mike Mansfield, Democrat from Montana, as the longest serving Senate leader, party leader in history, 16 years. Axios writing ahead of the speech, Senator McConnell will take stock of previous Senate stalwarts, including Robert Dole, Senator Robert Taft, and former President and former Senate Majority Leader Lyndon Johnson, commenting on their styles and the secrets of their successes. And with a wry wink, Senator McConnell will align himself with senators who stayed out of the spotlight and who preferred to focus on serving their colleagues rather than dominating them.
But it's certainly true that overall, Mansfield did not view and did not treat the Senate as a mere means to policy ends he favored. Yes, the former history teacher was a Democrat. He did want particular results, and he often got them. But he seems to have felt the most valuable end was the institution of the Senate itself, its processes and debates, its traditions, its structures, and all 100 of its members. He saw his job as facilitating the Senate as a whole, working its will and not just working his will. Again, this unusually neutral style came with costs. For example, LBJ was convinced Mansfield could have jammed through the Civil Rights Act actually earlier if he'd played harder ball with the Southerners. Earlier, JFK had grown exasperated with his friend's patient handling of Dirksen, while Republicans slow-walked Kennedy's nuclear test ban treaty. But take note, in both cases, the priorities did eventually pass, and they probably became law with broader and deeper support because Mansfield allowed members more time, more space, and face-saving.
The Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell today on the Senate floor, breaking the record as the longest-serving Senate party leader, passing the late Senator Mike Mansfield. Senator McConnell first elected to the Senate in 1984 And then he entered the leadership in 2003 as whip, serving there for 4 years, starting in 2009. He became Republican leader. Both in his party was in the majority and the minority. As the 118th Congress begins, Senator Ben Sasse, Republican from Nebraska, resigning to become president of the University of Florida. He first won election in 2014, reelected in 2020, but leaving this year, speaking on the Senate floor about that.
A lot of us behind closed doors when the cameras are off say that we want a different Senate. We want a place that prioritizes long-term legislation that looks at the nation's most fundamental challenges. A lot of us want an institution that takes seriously the rise of an expansionistic, militant, imperialist China and debates the best paths to attacking that challenge. And that does happen, but it happens in the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is both good but also a cautionary tale about our more fundamental problem. Intel works largely because we have no cameras there to reward performative grandstanding. Intel works because it's classified and because it has the excuse of being classified. So where will be the meaningful beyond tribal debates about the hollowing out of local communities, about the increasing deaths of despair? Where will we debate how we can more effectively address the crisis of family formation and the crisis of our long-term debt? What we say we want and what we actually do here are worlds apart. Senators get cowed by threats from social media mobs, advocacy organizations, small dollar donors, and cable hosts. Senators learn when they're up for re-election that they're supposed to have kept their heads down, not rocked the boat, not talked about long-term issues, and take the path of least resistance to surviving the next election cycle. And that is making this body increasingly irrelevant, something none of us actually want. But there really is no substitute for the Senate. If recovery is going to come, it will mostly be built in local institutions in a million different ways, but the Senate is an essential ingredient to enabling that. No other place can serve the purpose of this room. Some people, including weirdly some who serve in this body, think that the public square has migrated online, that you can substitute debate of humans who actually know each other and take a long-term perspective with social media and with tweets. They're lying to themselves. Twitter is awesome for sports, to be clear. But if it serves any broader public purpose, it's basically just a public reminder of the lunatic asylum that is potential in all social contagion. Digital space cannot recreate what this chamber does, and hard thinking can almost never happen in 280 characters.
Senator Ben Sasse, Republican from Nebraska, on the Senate floor today. His resignation to become president of the University of Florida takes effect this week. He is midway through his second 6-year term. KLKN-TV in Lincoln, Nebraska reports there's been speculation about who will fill the empty seat, with Governor Pete Ricketts and Ann Ashford throwing their hats in the ring. That's actually former Governor Pete Ricketts. Filling the positions will be solely up to the new governor, Jim Pillen, a Republican. Ann Ashford is an attorney who ran unsuccessfully for a U.S. House seat in 2020. From the Miami Herald, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis sounded much like a 2024 presidential candidate as he was sworn into a second term Tuesday, addressing national issues like immigration and inflation as much as highlighting his own plans for the state. Governor DeSantis turned to the message that helped him win re-election by a landslide and build a national image as a conservative, blasting woke ideology, repeatedly calling Florida a leader for freedom, and setting the stage for a potential run for the White House. That from the Miami Herald. Here's part of the inaugural speech from Tallahassee.
Over the past few years, as so many states in our country grinded their citizens down, we in Florida lifted our people up. When other states consigned their people's freedom to the dustbin, Florida stood strongly as freedom's linchpin. When the world lost its mind, when common sense suddenly became an uncommon virtue, Florida was a refuge of sanity, a citadel of freedom for our fellow Americans and even for people around the world. In captaining the ship of state, we choose to navigate the boisterous sea of liberty, rather than cower in the calm docks of despotism. We face attacks. We take hits. But we weather the storms. We stand our ground. And we do what's right. As the book of Psalms reminds us, I will not fear though tens of thousands assail me on every side. We have refused to use polls and to put our finger in the wind. Leaders do not follow, they lead.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Republican, taking his oath of office for a second term, inaugural address in Tallahassee. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word, to get the stories Washington is talking about sent to your inbox every day. You can subscribe at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.